Hello, my friends, and welcome to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and joining me, as always, is your co-host, Jim.
Ladies and gentlemen, the internet. Don't do it.
Don't do it. Okay.
I'm not.
And, and your co-host, Hunter.
I scared the shit out of you,
though. We're having a grand old time.
We'll tell the tale toward the end of the show, but people have to stay tuned because we're just going to, it's just going to hit the fan.
And we have a guest this week joining us from where? Plano, Texas?
Yeah. Well, I'm in Dallas right now. But
Dallas,
yes.
Texas. Yeah. I thought you said Plano earlier.
I do live in Plano, but right now I'm in Dallas.
Oh, okay. Joining us from Dallas, Texas. He's been on the show before. Talk about their recently hitting Steam early access arcadey, shooty thing, space gamey thing. Battle for Soul, Chris Stockman. Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Oh, it is good to have you back. And it's good to see the game on Steam because the last time you were on and we got to play a little of this, there wasn't much of it. It felt, you know, a lot less fleshed out. But this feels like the real deal, which I would hope so because you're charging money for it now.
Yeah, it definitely feels much fleshier.
Out for just a second. Are we actually live? Because I am not seeing anything on Twitch.
Oh my God, Brian forgot to hit the button.
We're on. Hang on. Yeah, we're. I mean, I'm looking at Restream.io, and it is going. That's what I use to stream to Twitch. Hang on a second.
Oh man.
Oh my God, really? I really like this service. I don't want to have to not use it.
Game over, man.
Sorry to interrupt everything.
Hang on. No, it's okay. No, it's weird. It does say offline. That is really fucking strange.
Are you restreaming to YouTube as well?
Yeah, let me look at YouTube. Sorry, folks. One second.
If you're actually there.
Oh, God. Yeah, we might have to start again. Oh, no, I'm live on YouTube.
What the fuck?
All right, that's it. Everybody, I want to be like the Mad Money guy. It's like, take all your money out of Twitch, invest in YouTube. Quick.
Everybody out! Shit's broke.
So, wait a minute. Yeah, this is very strange. No, YouTube, it's weird. You know, as an aside, people have been telling me when I stream to all three that YouTube does give them a much, much, much better experience.
It is cleaner. I'm not going to lie. It is cleaner.
Have you considered RedTube?
Because you can adjust the playback quality for one thing.
Oh, you can?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, I can have your stream come to me at 144p if I want to.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's pretty cool.
So we're Twitch, fuck that shit.
Brian, what's that multi-broadcaster thing that you're using?
It's called Restream.io, and that's what I'm using right now.
Can it restream out to RedHub or RedTube?
What's that? I don't even know what that is. What is that? Is that a porn thing?
Yeah.
You don't want to know.
It sounds like a porn thing.
Well, they let you do live webcams, right? So I just figured that we could stream.
Let's go on to Chatterbait. Let's go.
All right, let's stop it for a second. All right, I'm stopping it.
I can't stop.
And then I'm going to stop
it. I can't stop.
All right, let's see if this works. I restarted the thing. Guys, this is gold stuff here. This is classic. We were having some technical difficulties, and they're pretty funny.
If you were paying for the Patreon, you would hear this every single week. But we're just going to let you have a little teaser of the shenanigans that actually go on.
Okay, so it's going to Restream. Wait a minute. Oh, we're okay, it's working on Twitch now.
It is working on Twitch now. Look at that.
Yay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, folks.
Coming in good on Pornhub.
Reboot and?
We're doing that again. All right. Let's kind of start sort of over. Welcome to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. That's Jim. That's Hunter. That's our guest, Chris.
Ladies and gentlemen. From Dallas. Balls. What? Hey, is Plano, Texas like the opposite of fancy Texas?
Wah, wah, wah.
I know, right?
Oh my God. Folks, it's been an interesting evening. We're here to talk about Battle of Soul, which if you recall, we've talked about before. It was about a year ago.
Yeah.
I think it was about a year ago we had you on, Chris. And the game was, even though it was not an expansion, but like an extension slash reboot of Soul Exodus.
Yeah.
It still had a lot more meat to put on the bone. And now now that it's come out, I can already tell you've worked hard because if I recall in the original training scenario, basically you have like what was the original training scenario split up into like two or three separate scenarios now. But if I recall in the original, it was like one long scenario. And that's a lot better because it gives people a moment to breathe. So that kind of stuff alone is really just fantastic.
Well, but I think the pacing is much better in this new one.
It does feel better. It does feel better. And we're going to talk about some of the other enhancements in a moment. I'm going to start a new campaign so you can see them in action. But there's an elephant in the room that is begging us to talk about it. So let's get that. Let's just hit that.
Okay.
Let's hit that elephant. There's been a lot, there's been a lot of talk about Star Citizen lately. Derek Smart's very long blog post kind of got the ball rolling. I mean, other places, I mean, on the forums I've been on, people have been talking about, you know, how it's failing and people have been, you know, naysaying it for a while. So, but Derek Smart's blog post really got the ball rolling on people, more and more people talking about their concerns about the game. So, Chris, you actually brought this up that you wanted to talk about it. So, what are your thoughts on this current Star Citizen situation?
I mean, I think it's about time someone speaks up and starts slinging truth. And what he speaks, despite it being fairly wordy and a little bit egocentric, egocentric, I still think the heart of his message actually is 100% spot on, and that people need to stop spending money on $400 figments of their imagination. That's just the reality of it, and people need to stop it. And
well, as someone who has spent that much money on figments of my imagination, here's where I came from. Like back in 2012, when this was first announced, I mean, the space game resurgence really hadn't taken off yet. It was kind of in its initial rumblings.
Yeah.
But so it's like, oh my god, it's Wing Commander guy. Oh my god, so. It was really easy to get caught up in the hype surrounding it.
Well, and it also actually, since it did come right at the beginning, I think it is responsible for a lot of the attention that the resurgence got because, my God, $70 million, you know, and it's like, hey, people might like 80,
Isn't it up to 85 now?
Yeah.
You know, the last time I looked at it, it was at 60, so that tells you it's been a while. 85
now.
Continue, sorry.
Right, so it's just kind of like, okay, that did a favor to the entire genre. However, if it doesn't produce, I cannot see how he would fail to release something, right? And then maybe continue to make it fun and fleshed out.
That's the problem.
I would have had something out by now.
Here's the problem. I watched all of those 10 for the chairmans, and I watched all of the extended, you know, what do you call those, stretch goals, right? I watched all of the stretch goals. I see all, and it's like, he never said no.
Yeah.
The team, they never said no. And so here's where it gets them in a bind. Like they promised the world, they promised every game in existence. And you can't even make a Call of Duty that is an annual release for less than $100 million. So how is anybody and here's the thing, he's preying on ignorance. That's what I see. He preys on the masses' ignorance of how games actually cost and how much they take and how long they take.
Yeah.
And that's where it borderlines on fraudulent because it's literally preying on people that don't know any better.
Well, it's almost like he started a whole second business that was just the marketing, and that, you know, it's like, oh, we're going to do the broadcasts and we're going to have all the whatever. And it was kind of like half the budget went to the hype machine to sustain the raking of the money. And, but I'm surprised that it continues at the pace that it has.
It's slowed
still,
down.
Still, okay.
It really has slowed down. But what really
it's still made it from 60 to 80.
So here's my thing. Yeah. Has this company that Chris Roberts has formed to make this game, have they made any other games as this company?
No.
Right. They're brand new.
Exactly. So here's the thing. Yes, they may be veterans, but they made a specific promise, right? They made a specific promise of a game that they haven't delivered on, and yet they keep adding on promises.
Yeah,
I think that the thing, it needs to be seriously evaluated by somebody from some legal team, because their initial promise was this game, but they haven't done anything to release this game other than what, Arena Commander, which is don't get me wrong, is a load of shit.
It's boring as hell. Yeah, I'm so, you know, it's boring.
Well, it's a tech demo, right?
No. Well, no, hold on a second. Then he goes on to say, well, now we're going to incorporate first person shooter bullshit. Like, why? Well, wait a second.
Are you channeling David Braben? Because that's what's coming to fuck up the other game that we like. So,
I'm serious, because you have one game that has, like, you're going to do exploration, you're going to do space combat, you're going to do this, and it's going to have Squadron 42 story campaign, whatever, right? So deal with that.
Yeah, the difference with Elite, Jim, is that we have a game we can play now. I mean, if they might add first person walking around, like, maybe a couple of years down the line, but they've already got a game that works.
At this point,
there may not be a lot to it, but it's a game that works.
At this point, $85 million, the best thing Chris Roberts could do is buy No Man's Sky and stick it in his fucking game and just say, okay, No Man's Sky is going to release on its own as well, but we just licensed all of it, so we're going to put our own.
Keep this in mind, right? Keep this in mind when you think about $85 million. It's a tremendous amount of money. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
But also think about their burn rate. And from a person that, like myself, who has run, you know, granted small studios before, this isn't my first one, it's my second one. Right. I know a thing or two about burn rate. I know how expensive this industry is and how expensive running a studio is. Right. He's got 300 people across the world.
They recently opened a fourth office.
It wasn't recent. It's been open for months.
No, it was, well, recently in that regard. I mean, they had the other offices for a while now, but the Frankfurt office is relatively new.
Yeah, well, didn't they go to, like, a studio recently and shoot a whole bunch of cinematic stuff?
They went to England, motion capture. Right? Yeah, they went to a film studio in England and basically did a bunch of motion capture for Squadron 42. Now, Squadron 42 is supposed to be out this year.
We've heard next to nothing about Squadron.
Yeah, that's because, like, the FPS is fully integrated into Squadron 42. So people are saying that the FPS is on hold indefinitely. If that was the case, and I don't think it is, it's not on hold indefinitely. But if it was, that means there is no Squadron 42. It's that integrated. I mean, they talked about it on their around the verses and stuff. So
yeah,
you know, they're gonna. My prediction is that they'll release Squadron 42. It's gonna be a broken mess like Arena Commander was. That Ilphonic studio that's working on it does not have a great track record. And you can't just like magically put. You can't sprinkle Chris Roberts in and make a studio that's mediocre to great, right? Well, it doesn't work like that.
And my own journey with the game has been very rocky. I mean, it started, I was very positive on it. I was a defender of it. I was like, this is going to be great. And then the stretch goals just kept rolling in. I think when they announced that you can get a fish tank as a stretch goal, I was like, I don't know. But it wasn't even this talent that left. That wasn't even the thing that bugged me. It was that a couple of weeks ago, on one hand, they announced the indefinite hold of their first-person shooter platform thing. On the other hand, they started taking orders for a $400 luxury liner at the same time.
Yes.
That really, I got to be honest, that rubbed me wrong. Like, at some point, you got to stop with the stretch goals. You just got to say, every cent that we get from now on is going directly to development.
Well, here's what's interesting about that. It wasn't a stretch goal. So what that was, was that it originally was a stretch goal to have that ship included. Okay. So,
right.
And that they met that. So really what that was a concept sale, which is different. It's
right.
People that funded it. I don't really, this is the one thing I'm unclear. I don't know if everybody that funded it to get to that stretch goal gets that ship.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
You know, or it's just something that still, it's a ridiculous ship. $400 is an insane amount of money
for a luxury liner.
Yeah. But if you think about it,
$400 for an in-game luxury liner.
But think about this. The capital ships that he was trying to sell were three times that amount.
Oh yeah. There was the Bengal carrier for several thousand, I think
it was like $1,200. Yeah. I mean, and the whole idea behind this game is all of these people can man, you know, multi-crew ships and they all function in this world and all that. And another big scary aspect of it is the engine. Far Cry 3 has never, ever powered a game of this magnitude before.
No. Crytek has never run a game of this scope.
And here's another problem. Okay, the Crytek guys, there's a little bit of nervousness about everybody that's using Crytek because they had a little shakeup in the Austin office about a year ago. And I don't know how they have recovered because the guy that I knew that was there left. In the, you know, like he got out the door right before the ceiling fell down. So I don't know what the hell's going on with the whole Cry technology. So, but you know, it's kind of a weird investment. Like if that company's a little bit unstable, if they were on like Unreal Engine or something, I'd be like, yeah, okay, that's not going anywhere. But
I mean, that's what Battle of Seoul runs on.
Here's my question for you. So you, for all three of you actually, and the audience, because we got some audience chatter. So here's my question. If you develop this campaign and you're receiving funds after funds after funds, right?
Yeah.
80 some odd million dollars now that you have garnered plus whatever else you might be getting from other stuff and you're paying these people.
Yeah.
What if this game collapses and folds? They don't have the money to reimburse these people.
Right.
Yeah. They've already spent
they've already spent it. So it's one of those things where it's just like someone's going to have to come in and put a halter on them saying, you guys can't accept any more funds until this is done, or release it. Release something and have people, like, purchase the game. Or, like, because I was – Brian posted on Space Game Junkie about what are our thoughts on it. And I was very clear on my opinion that release your initial, like, thing. Like, or give us an alpha or something. Let people start actually getting into it, playing it, letting
That's
you know
That's what Arena wrong. Commander is, man.
No. Arena Commander is a load of bullshit because if you've ever walked in that hangar and tried to get into your ship, it's clunky, it's buggy. Like, I don't know how many times I've had to restart it just because the character controls are just so buggy, right?
And the funny thing is, there are ships, like, I've two of the four ships I've purchased, I can't even, like, fly.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and that's obnoxious. And so you've got those problems. And then Arena Commander is just that's all it is. It's an arena where you can fly around and shoot. Like, that's nothing. Like, that, I mean, this Battle of Seoul gives me more combat and thrill than, you know, than anything that has come out of Star Citizen.
Yep.
Anything. And, you know, I could have gotten this game as a complimentary for being a part of this show, but I actually bought it because I was interested.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, so, I mean, it's just, I think it's so ridiculous that you have these services, right? That you have these, you know, I just think that the base game needs to come out at a small price. Then if they want to get the add-on, say you want to get Arena Commander, you spend $10 to get Arena Commander, and then you can have Arena Commander. And then you pay enough, lo and behold, you spent $60 on this game, and you have the complete package. Well, new games are $60 anyway. So, I mean, it's just like, I don't know. This whole thing is so frustrating.
The problem is that they're building everything in modules. And the modules are built by separate teams in separate time zones. And so what they're trying to do, and I, you know, I mean, honestly, it's the way to do it. If you're taking a distributed development route for a company that's never done distributed development. You know, think Ubisoft doesn't do this at all. Ubisoft, they have one sort of central code base, and everybody and all the distributed teams work from that. But they do create, you know, parts of the game in separate countries. But they've been doing, Ubisoft has been doing this for a decade. Here's a brand new company with basically all new people trying to make the biggest game in the history of games. You know,
it's going to be 100 gigs, apparently.
Yeah, I mean,
100 gigs? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, they should sell it on its own SSD. You know, like it's a cartridge.
Yeah, well, Arena Commander is 26 gigs. Like, if you download the whole package, it's 26.
It's that big?
Yeah.
I had no idea it was that big. Oh, my gosh.
You know, that's because, like, you have to include every ship.
Oh.
So any ship in the game has to be included in the package.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
How else would it show up?
So wait, if Arena Commander by itself is 26 gigs, how is the whole game going to be only 100 gigs?
Well, remember this, like, none of this is procedural generated, right? So,
yeah.
Like, No Man's Sky, the whole, you know, universe is math, right? It's gonna be probably pretty low, space-wise, cause it's procedurally generated, but, you know, Star Citizen is hand-built.
Right, yeah.
And they're promising 100 star systems, and I mean, there's just no way.
They also promise you can run your own server. Like, can you still do that?
I mean, really, at this rate, right, they're not going to be done until 2021, you know.
And I wish they would have said that instead of 2014.
I think the solution is if they bring in somebody like Peter Molyneux who can get it done, then never mind.
Well, I mean, like I said, I think what they really need to do is pull it back in, release their initial game, right? Just release, like, the Squadron 42 or whatever it is, or just, like, the exploration space
universe,
stuff.
Right?
Just release that, right? And then make an expansion or make a sequel or make something, because Christ almighty, you're not going to get it. Like, it, you know, if they don't launch, I said this too, I firmly believe if they don't launch quarter one of 2016, it's done.
It won't happen. I guarantee
it's not going to happen. They're nowhere near launching anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything is so unstable there. I mean, it's a mess, dude. It's just a complete disaster. And it's going to have ramifications across the whole industry, crowdfunding in general. And, you know, we can think, what I consider their greed. We can thank their greed, and we can thank all the people that bought into it. And it's not, you know, and you can't blame the people that bought into it, because this is everyone's dream game.
Yeah, that's why I bought into it. Yeah,
is people that prey on people that don't know how games are really made, and that they believe in someone that, you know, that gave them great time during their childhood, and they want to live that nostalgia, and they tapped into that market, and you know, it's a very powerful feeling, and this is what happens. So I feel bad for all the people that work at these studios, because they're going to be out of jobs. And I feel bad for all the people that put in money to live a dream. But I don't feel bad for Chris Roberts or all his cronies that just kept agreeing to everything. They're going to get what's coming to them.
Well, let's bring that up real quick. So they're the lead guy, right? Who is it? Alex? What's his face? Is gone?
Oh, the executive producer. Yeah.
And whose brother gets put in charge of that shit?
Oh, of course, of course. Oh yeah. I mean, it makes sense from their point of view. Sure.
Yeah. It feels like a shady deal. Like it feels
slimy,
really does.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't spend much, right? I bought a basic ship just so I could get into the Arena Commander and try it out and see what it was all about. But that 30 or 40 bucks that I spent right now feels awful. Like,
how do you think I feel?
No, I know, Brian. I know how much you've spent, and I feel bad. But, like, it's just terrible, because something's gonna come out of this, and it's gonna have the worst ramifications. You've said it best.
Just know that what Derek says about this game not being able to be completed is 100% correct. The way they have it scoped out, it's impossible. The tech does not exist. It just doesn't. It's just a fact. It's a it's It does not exist. So people can say, well, they'll get it right. They'll get it right. No, they won't, because the tech doesn't exist. And you can't create the tech with our processing power with the type of visual fidelity in the promises that they want. It's not possible. I'm telling you right now, it's not possible.
So I don't know if you can answer this, but let's take a look at a game that's been finished. Like, how much did Soul Exodus cost to make? Roughly, can you even say that?
Yeah, $500,000.
What?
Yeah, $500,000.
Wow, that just seems like a lot.
Yeah.
But it's a drop in the bucket for Star Citizen.
But you know what?
I've fallen off my chair.
Soul cost $100,000.
What?
Yeah.
Is that because you already had the foundation of the original game to build upon?
Yeah.
That sounds pretty great, actually.
So the problem, though, is how many units do you have to move in order to recoup $500,000 at, what are you selling it at, 15, 20 bucks?
Right? So, well, I don't have to recoup $500,000. I have to recoup, I say it costs $100,000, but I only put in 50, and then I got the rest from NVIDIA, actually, because we're doing a Shield version for their console, you know, their Android
console. Nice. Oh, yeah, nice.
Really?
I love Shield. I love the Shield.
Oh, wow, nice.
Hunter's an agent of Shield, in fact.
I've not. Yeah, he really is. I've not played this with a gamepad yet, but the controls are simple enough and straightforward enough that I could totally see this working fine on a gamepad.
I actually think it plays better on a gamepad than anything else.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Well, I'm used to the mouse and keyboard, and I'm liking it just fine. But I saw that you're about to add HOTAS support for the game.
Yes. Yeah.
That's pretty great.
If you guys release this on the Shield, I will buy it for the Shield and play it.
Yeah. It's almost done. It's already running. It's already running about on par with the PC version. We're just fixing some last minute sort of graphical anomalies, glitches, and then, I mean, it'll be ready to go. I mean, it's all basically done.
I just like the one thing I really appreciate about it is it's also very clean, like graphically. There aren't too many, like, it doesn't get fuzzy in some places where, like, I've just seen games like of this caliber that they just don't look as clean. This looks very clean and polished, and I like that.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think there's some definite. I think our UI, you know, is kind of, especially our front end menus could use a lot of work, but I think they're ugly, kind of ugly as sin. I think our all of our environments, you know, we redid all of our environments. We redid some ships, created all new ships. I think we definitely learned a lot of lessons from the previous game. And so we applied those lessons and made, I think, a much visually better game. And a game from a gameplay mechanic standpoint is really light years better than the original one.
Yeah, it definitely feels better. And there's a lot that you've done that I really like. Like, I told you how I feel about smart targeting. I'm such a fan of that. Now, how exactly does that work? That's a new thing. And I like it because it targets pretty much what you need to shoot at, which for a game with controls that are more on the simple side like this is perfect. How does exactly the smart targeting work? Because that's probably one of my favorite new things.
I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, I've been adamant from the very beginning, from Soul Exodus, that this game be playable 100% with a gamepad. I thought that that's what, in my opinion, the space shooting genre, that's what would, you know, appeal to sort of the masses. Like, I'm trying to bring the genre to the average person, maybe, right. You know, the average gamer. That's sort of like my goal for this, to create something not so semi, easy to play, and you don't have to remember an entire keyboard to play it. So, so smart targeting was sort of derived from that, where you needed a way to, prioritize targets that the player would be interested in. And so it basically looks at like the mission. And, you know, for example, if you have to protect a specific target and there are incoming missiles, that are headed to that said target, smart targeting will basically, when you press smart targeting, it'll automatically target those missiles above anything else.
Oh, beautiful.
So there's no hunting around for anything. It just works magically.
You need like a Jarvis voice in there.
Yeah, right. I know. It's I mean, you know, definitely. I mean, and then of course, you know, if there's a ship targeting you, and then those missiles are not present, smart targeting will instantly target the ship that's targeting you. So it prioritizes based on the mission, design, and the ships that are targeting you. So
that's how it works. That's beautiful. That's how it should work.
It's just a simple button press, right? You don't have to, like,
which is nice.
I didn't want for people to have to memorize an entire keyboard to play the game. I mean, that was the goal from the original, and it just extended to make it better and more polished on this one.
Yeah. I'm looking at you, X-Wing.
Or Strike Suit Zero. Hello, Strike Suit Zero, you son of a bitch. Another,
you know what's interesting about Strike Suit Zero? I want to sort of go off on a bit of a tangent here. You know there's no radar at all?
I know. Yeah,
I mean, how does that game get a pass? I just want to know. Like, there's no radar. Their UI is a complete clutter mess.
Yeah. The worst I think is when you got the strike suit and you're like, oh yeah, this is going to be cool. I've been flying around. Let's get in the strike suit. Ugh.
I was not.
Wait, why are we stopped? Why are we a turret now?
I was not expecting cluttered mess to be the next two words that came out of his mouth. But yes, that's my sentiment as well. they have the, around the outer perimeter of the screen, don't they? They have arrows that kind of point to where the ships are, because that's kind of how EVE Online does it.
That doesn't count. EVE Online, though, has somewhat of a like a directional thing, though.
That's kind of a radar.
What about the X games, like X3? Right. It also has. Well, you can pull up a little window that's a radar, but you also get the thing around the perimeter of the screen that just points like there's a ship here and it's this far. So I don't know. I mean, it's a choice.
Is it one at a time or is it all of them?
It's all of them.
Oh my god, that's a cluttered mess. What if there's like, you know, 20 ships in the scene? You have 20 arrows?
Yep.
Oh my lord.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I mean, in EVE Online though, it's based on how many ships you can actually target and track. So if you can only go up to like 8, it'll only like show you 8.
Right.
But it's also got like a radar menu on the side. Right, so you can see what's like in your area, and you can just click on the menu, and it'll target it.
Right.
Which doesn't work for a game like this.
No. Not at all. Because you can't just be like, you know, using your mouse to like click on stuff. You're trying to pilot.
Have you ever played Darkstar 1 for the 360?
Not for the 360, but we have played the PC version. We did a whole podcast about it way back in the day, actually, didn't we?
Yep. Yeah. Sure did.
Yeah, yeah. You know, no, I played Dark, but I actually bought it for the 360. It was like, I think like probably 10 copies were made or something like that. I mean, like you, I remember going to Best Buy to pick it up and they only had like one copy. I bought, you know, I made the store, you know, sell out, you know, like they only ordered one.
But dude, that's why you have to pre-order because you never know when.
But they actually put in, and this is, again, like, this is why I think the space genre has failed on consoles, is because they actually put in this targeting system where you had to bring up a targeting box to select your target.
On a console?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. It was so convoluted. It was like you had to press, like, 3 buttons or something like that to bring up the targeting box. Then you use the D-pad to select the target. And I'm like, think about, like, you're in the middle of combat. How could you actually do that?
Now, I never had an opportunity to play Battlefront 2 on a console. How was that with flying and targeting and such?
I don't know.
You know, I don't know, actually. I mean, I know that the Battlefront series was always in third person, so...
Well, yes and no, but yeah.
I mean, the shooter, the ship stuff.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Not the first-person stuff, but the ship stuff was in third person. So you have more spatial awareness. But yeah, I don't know how the targeting worked, actually. It's been such a long time since I played it.
But you are right. It's
the third one.
Yeah, the consoles have had a rough time with space games. That's true.
Hey, Jedi Starfighter was amazing, you guys.
Yeah, let's not go there. Just shh.
I mean, right. The Rogue
that game did not exist.
The Rogue Squadron series was really good.
Rogue Squadron was really good. I mean, Star Wars like console games have always done really well, in my opinion.
Yeah, but Jedi Starfighter, that Force Lightning can't strike twice because it's amazing. Because that is the only game where you can actually cast wizard spells out of your Starfighter, and I think that's great.
I really wish like the Rogue Squadron series would return or the X-Wing return for console. I mean,
they're going to make you regret that in about 6 months because when they bring it back,
I know.
I would accept a remake of TIE Fighter as a Lego game. Just don't have the cute little Lego dudes running around. Just have starships built from frickin' Legos that explode into bricks. And then just give me a genuine reboot of TIE Fighter in that new, cool,
in
weird
Lego?
Engine.
Oh,
hell yes. That would be pretty great.
I think we should start a campaign to get us to develop that stuff. Because, I mean, I made a shooter that's pretty decent, I think, for, I consider Battle of Soul is more of a console-ified shooter. It just is not on a console yet, and probably won't be.
Is it still coming for the PS4? I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, I don't know. Maybe. Probably not.
So for Xbox One, which is already running Windows 10, right? Is it just kind of a straight port? Is the problem getting past the gatekeeper of Microsoft, or is the problem actually porting the game?
No, the problem is it worth the money? Is there enough of an audience for that? Mm. And like Xbox One, they just released Elite Dangerous, so now it's like we're going up the 250-pound gorilla.
Game, there's stuff to do, and in Elite Dangerous, there isn't. So those people are going to burn out in about 5
Come
minutes.
On, there's stuff to do in Elite. You just have to find it. That's
oh, my gosh. Look, there's a star. Look, I haven't seen two planets. One's green and one's blue.
Oh, come on.
I've never
on.
Seen that. Let me take a screenshot. Hold on. I have to take a selfie. Now we have a selfie cam. I really wish that there was actually like a selfie stick coming out of the cockpit that would deploy the selfie stick.
Engage selfie stick.
It's like can't engage the hyperdrive because the selfie stick is deployed. Please retract selfie stick.
Oh, God. Careful, Jim. They might actually do that.
That could actually be a faction reward, right? For like the what? Who's the little blue haired girl? You could actually get like if you're like top 10 in the faction, then you get a selfie stick for your ship.
Like a selfie stick module that you can install,
right? Because she's like a little blue haired anime princess, right? And it would just be so.
That's funny. The Emperor's daughter. I'll have you know.
I'd hit it. What?
Oh well, yeah.
I'd hit it like a tree on Endor.
I'd hit it. I'd hit it like
Jesus.
I hit it like the outside of the station.
We are terrible people.
Yeah, I hit it like the outside of the station.
Dude, I so wish you could have been there to hear Brian impact on the outside of the space station, because I'm sitting there and I'm talking to somebody, and then all of a sudden I hear bong. Brian comes over.
That was jump kid,
like,
though.
God
not
damn it. Yeah, I know, but it was...
Well, do you remember that one time Brian's got this saved as a highlight on his Twitch channel? Where it was just like, I boosted into the station, and all of a sudden you just see me, like, hit the back, tumble, and explode, and all I do is just start laughing. And
yeah, I thought you were being all clever and slick and shit, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, shit.
I thought you had the landing gear and the afterburner keys mixed up or something. Hey, if you really want to screw with somebody, that's what you do. You remap the landing gear to the afterburner
key. Yeah.
Feel like I'm dropping the gear. Oh, God!
What?
No, I mean, whenever you hit... Oh, yeah, it would work both ways, right? It just depends on which one they need to use first. It'll get them killed either way. But my problem with Elite, and I'm going to say it again, and I'll try to keep it down to like 5 times this podcast, there is no challenge in that game. okay? It's a complete game. It's released, right? And they're still adding whatever. And then they start talking like, oh, we're going to put the first person, whatever. And I'm like, dude, put a game in here, right? It's a cool sandbox right now, but there's nothing that can shoot at me, right? I get interdicted by a pirate or something.
Well,
I cut my engines and pull out my guns, and I'm just like, one less pirate coming up. Because
So the thing with MMOs, right? Well, here's the thing with like MMOs or massive online games like this is like you play them, you get a mission or a quest, whatever it is, and it's go here, kill this, come back, get money, go here, do this, get money, right? Yeah. So they have that, but the way in which they do it is so confusing. Mm-hmm. Like it's like go to this system and assassinate this guy. Okay, so you're in the system. Where is he? I have to scan down all of these unidentified signal sources and like try and find the one that he's in. And I could spend 30 minutes trying to do it, but I only have like 45 minutes in order to like kill the guy.
Right. But
so it's just like,
well, the other
there's
problem,
there's no identifying like this is the signal source you got to go to.
Right. But the other problem is, and maybe they fixed that, right? Because it used to be that in that half hour that you would be scanning dudes looking for that one dangerous guy, I have already killed 15 anacondas in the res, and I have made like $2 million, and you have just made like $100,000 for hunting all over the place looking for this guy. So, therefore,
right.
That shit's invalid, right? And
right.
It would exactly. It would be like, you know, in EverQuest, like go out and kill 100 rats and bring me their tails. Oh, here's a dollar. Right? So like, no, it just doesn't work for me. But now we went to a high intensity res. You weren't there. Brian and I did. We went to a high intensity res, which is supposed to be scary now. And we were in like low security space too, man. We tried to find like the shittiest place to go and get mm-hmm. killed. And we jumped in there and all we're seeing is sidewinders.
It's like trying to go to Detroit and all you see is bears, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
The bears. Basically. What?
The bears. But,
I don't know. If there was Ditka in space.
It was all sidewinders and eagles, and maybe a cobra. It was like, what is this?
Yeah.
Since you've been playing it, have you been using like the ETS system, the energy management sort of subsystem stuff that we put in?
Yeah, I've been using that a lot. That's a new thing as well. Thank you for getting to that. Because the original game did not have that, if I recall.
No.
Right, but now you can transfer energy from afterburners to weapons, or weapons to afterburners, or you could take energy from both and like do a quick health regen.
Yeah.
To keep you in the fight, which is nice because I remember in the original game, there were a lot of times where I was like at 2% health. I was like, oh, god damn it. I just want to finish this mission. Yeah.
So is putting the stuff into health, is that like a reset? Because you have it in engines or you have it in the weapons. Right, and then how do you center it again to to balance everything? Because I was looking over the keybinds.
Yeah, so the way you so when you basically deplete all your energy to restore your health, and then you basically you alter the regen rates. So the way you can quickly gain back your energy is basically alter your regen rate of your weapons or your afterburners. And then when you alter one, it reduces the rate. It actually slowly lowers the regen rate of the other. And so the trick is that you basically, you increase like your weapons regen rate, let it go all the way to the top, then, increase your afterburner regen rate, let that go all the way to the top, and your weapon regen rate will decrease a little bit, but that's how you gain sort of both of them back. Because by themselves, without increasing their regenerate, they regenerate at a much slower rate.
Okay, gotcha. So it's basically it's not like X-Wing where it's like I put points into this to set and then it stays.
It's a thing where if you hit this one button, you're taking energy away from your weapons and putting them into your afterburner, and vice versa.
Yeah, but it actually increases the regen rate. So basically, in a sense, it is kind of like X-Wing. because in X-Wing you can basically dump all of your energy or dump all of the regenerate into weapons at the expense of your shield. If you notice, like in X-Wing, if you divert all of your power into weapons and you fire, the weapon regenerate will be much higher, right? And then, but it'll slowly deplete your shields, or vice versa. That's sort of the way our system works as well. The one thing you can't do is you can't – we used to have this in, but we took it out because we felt it was superfluous. But you can't like fully transfer energy from one to the other. You just alter the rates of regeneration.
Oh, which is good. Yeah, I dig it. Oh,
but you can, but to heal, right? To heal to restore your hull integrity, you do transfer energy from both systems. That's the cost of healing.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I noticed that. I really do like this system.
I think a friend of mine. I was having a conversation on Facebook. I think probably about a couple years ago, and he brought up a very good point. He says he thought space games need that sort of management of subsystems because the majority of the time you're shooting and you need something to alter your keep you on your toes, so to speak,
and
sort of fresh and interesting. And so by doing that, I thought long and hard, and I was like, you know, he's right. So when I went back to the drawing board to sort of redesign this game, I tried to think of a way that I consoleified ship energy management. I mean, that's exactly what I did.
And that worked. You know, it makes sense. It's very simple. It's very straightforward. I mean, I don't know if the X-Wing system would work well on, just a gamepad. I mean, it kind of works in Elite Dangerous well enough, but not,
Yeah, but with Elite Dangerous, though, it's really pushing the thing in a direction, right? So, like, I tap my hat on my HODOS, the hat on my joystick, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I just tap it in the direction that I need more energy in what system. And I don't have to, I don't have to hit, F9 to, level this one up and then F10 to get that one to go down to zero. Like, I'm not cycling through, three different subsystems. I have one button that cycles all of my subsystems. And I think for a controller and a game like this with a mouse and keyboard, having a single button makes perfect sense. Where, you just did you blow something up there, Brian?
I got blowed up real quick. I got blowed up real quick.
Where you have a single button that does the thing. So I just push, R, whatever, and it recharges the one thing. I push T and it recharges the one thing. I don't have to cycle it through and then cycle the other thing down. And it makes sense just to have – it makes sense. So, yeah.
Yeah, it keeps it simple, right? So and another thing, on a gamepad, when you're playing with a gamepad, this is why I find gamepad a little bit more engaging than mouse and keyboard. In a sense that with mouse and keyboard, you have everything accessible to you right away. But with gamepad, you actually have to take your thumbs right off of the flight stick. If you have default controls, you have to take it off. And so for that momentarily, for that moment that you are recharging your rates or healing or whatever, your ship isn't – you can't move your ship. I mean, it's that's the trade-off. Now, of course, mouse and keyboard, there's no such trade-off, or even joystick, there's no such trade-off. But I find when playing with a gamepad, there is that split-second trade-off, and it really forces you to think about when you can heal and when you should when you should alter the regen rates. So,
yeah, I'm actually gonna have to go back in now and try this with the gamepad because that sounds.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to as well.
It sounds like it's a lot of fun, especially if I'm gonna pick it up on the shield.
Yeah, yeah, with the shield, yeah, I mean, that's the only way to play it. But and then we added countermeasures, which I thought was actually a late addition. We didn't have them for majority of development. The only way to down missiles was to go into slide and basically shoot them before they hit you. And that was like the old game. But we put in countermeasures to provide another method of getting rid of missiles without having to while staying locked onto your current target. And so you have that choice. You can destroy it if you want, or if you're in the middle of combat and you want to just take out one target and focus on that one target, you don't have to deviate from that target when a missile's locked onto you. And it actually allowed us to speed up the missiles considerably, and make them a little bit more, potent, because it, you know, you can't run it, you can't out boost from it, but you can divert it, if you time it perfectly. So, and not even that perfect, it's just within a sort of, a meter, a range, you can deploy your countermeasure and get rid of it. I find it a very, actually, pretty exhilarating experience.
I don't think I've used the countermeasures yet, honestly. I don't think had to.
But you will.
I was about to say, that's coming, I'm sure. It's on the way.
So, yeah, and then the other thing we did, right, is we just increased the game length across the board. So, you know, the old game, right, I think it was like 7 or 8 missions, and now we're at 21.
Nice.
Yeah, the old game was a lot shorter. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. So we're like, I think we're like 4 to 6 hours. I see average playthroughs from people at 5 hours. And I've gotten a lot of feedback that people are playing through it in one sitting, which is pretty amazing to me.
That's pretty good. I could see that, because you want to just keep playing, because the missions, see, this is the problem with, Strike Suit Zero, and I have to say the original version of the game, where like the missions just keep going. It's like, okay, yeah. I need a break, you know, I need to like breathe for a second, you know, God. But you know, now it's like, you could walk away for a second. And I also like the checkpoint system. I don't recall the original game having that either, because I just died and I was like, oh, I don't have to start from the beginning. That's right. Nice.
So now, we actually patched in a checkpoint system in the original game.
Okay.
We did, but here, yeah, I mean, we made it a lot better and a lot, you know, user friendly, and we don't want players to have to, you know, play through large sections of the game that they already played through. So no one likes doing that. So
yeah,
it was just sort of like one of those modern console type conveniences, you know.
Yeah, it's like nobody wants Dark Souls in space. That's
not really.
And we respawn everything.
So what game engine is this again?
It's Unreal 3.
Unreal 3. Okay. Now, how moddable is this game?
So here's what's interesting, and it's extremely moddable in the sense that if we ever got around to releasing our tools, our mission creation system is probably one of the easiest tools to use. We patterned it off of the Volition's Fred editor for Free Space 2. I worked at Volition. I didn't work on Free Space 2, but I worked at Volition for 3 years or so. And during I was design director on Saints Row 1.
See, we should have had you on that show, man, because we had the whole crew.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that show. It was awesome. You had Adam Fletcher and
a bunch of them. It was great.
Yeah,
I gotta get them back.
Those are awesome guys. I mean, I love them. You had Jason Scott. He was the writer.
And we had the former studio head. I forget.
Oh, Mike Kulas. Yep.
Yeah, he was there, which was great because he's retired. And I was like, wow, he came kind of sort of out of retirement to talk about this game. That's love right there.
Yeah, that is. No, they still really would like to make a space shooter if they could, but I don't think it's in the cards for them.
They just need to put soon. They need to have a DLC for Saints Row 5 or something.
Yeah, be like, right.
Gat Among the Stars, or I don't know.
I know. It'd be awesome. I mean,
in space, no one can hear you. Gat. I don't know. It's so, something.
Oh wow! You get to play the bad guys.
So because of that, my next question was then, where is the multiplayer?
Oh yeah. Well, it's not as easy as just using Unreal 3 sort of multiplayer stuff and boom, there you go. It's actually quite a bit of work to actually get multiplayer. We actually have prototypes that we did of multiplayer, but they are just that, prototypes. And you know, our team size right now is like 3. So
sure, yeah.
It's one of those things where you kind of have to pick your battles, and and multiplayer is a mass to get it done right. Right. It's really a massive undertaking to instead, you know, we didn't want to just do straight up simpleton dogfighting type of thing. You know, it's like I wanted to do like a full on objective mode, something that makes multiplayer a little more interesting. And yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, probably not anytime soon, not unless we all get rich and just can do what we want. But you know, never say never. I certainly would like it. I, you know, frankly, what I really want to do is release our tools to the community and let them do total conversions. Because basically the way we build our missions, I could, you know, if we just swapped out our assets and put X-Wing, you know, cockpits in and TIE fighters, I mean, you could build a total conversion and turn this into X-Wing in no time. I mean, other than creating the assets. The mission editor that I designed and that I used to build all of our missions is incredibly versatile in creating different mission types. So it really almost disguised the limit. You could have total conversions of X-Wing in a few months' time, really.
Because the way you had your strafing system in here, I'm seeing some Colonial Viper action.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was a big fan of Battlestar, so... I mean, huge. Yeah, same thing with BSG. You could do a total BSG conversion. You know, it literally just all it would take was just replacing the assets. I mean, literally, that's all it would do.
I'm smelling some potential here. Mm-hmm.
Like Steam Workshop seriously, support. Like this. I mean, Steam Workshop support. You know, people have been stuck with the Fred editor for, and it's good. You know, but it's definitely showing some age and. You know, here people could get a hold of our tools and build, you know, total conversions in no time at all. You know, I mean, Free Space 3 could exist with this tech.
Now that, okay, I'm really fascinated now. do you guys have plans for releasing these tools or is it just something you guys haven't really talked about?
Oh, no, we've talked about it. It's something that I absolutely want to do. I think it could, I mean, I'll just be honest with you. The hurdle that we've had to overcome trying to get people to pick up this game, you know, Soul Exodus is still fresh, I guess, in people's minds in a sense. Media doesn't want to cover us. You know, Steam did put us up on the popular new releases section for almost a week. So we're grateful for them for doing that. And that certainly helped. But at the end of the day, people still think, oh, this is just Soul Exodus with a fresh coat of paint, and that's certainly not the case, right? In any way, you know, it looks way better, yes, but gameplay wise, it's a light years, I think, ahead.
I mean, so, it feels a lot smoother and streamlined and fun. Yeah, definitely.
But Jim, the sales, do you still have this list of contacts?
What's up?
I was asking Jim, does he still have those list of contacts like those YouTubers?
Yeah, actually, I do. Totes.
He's got a list of YouTubers he might be able to send to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's really sort of getting the word out. And I was saying, like, I mean, sales wise, it's done okay, but it's not done. You know, it's not made its money back. Let's just put it that way. I think part of that is because of the genre. I think part of that is discoverability. And I think part of that is trying to overcome the old game. Didn't want to, you know, people ask me, right, why didn't you completely change the name to something else? And again, and what I told them is that I felt like that would be deceitful. It would be trying to say that we're something that we're not. We are related to the old game. There is a lot of similar aspects to it.
Right.
So I didn't want to say, well, I just didn't want to try to pull the wool over consumers' eyes. I respect the consumer too much to try to do something like that. But there's still that hurdle to overcome, right? And it's been a difficult challenge. And I'm not a social media whore, so I don't really have and I use that in only the affectionate way possible, right? I'm just not adept at the whole social media thing. So I don't have a million Twitter followers and all that thing. I probably have like 60. So, it's been very, very difficult. And that's why I like coming on your shows, because I can really sort of, pimp it out in a sense, if we're using the whore metaphor. So, but yeah, I digress. I think the releasing the tools, in my opinion, could bring a larger user base to the game, right? Because suddenly they have access to creating their own missions and adding like Steam Workshop support, for example, people could create their own campaigns, their own total conversions, and release those to the public. I think that's entirely possible. It would take us a bit of work, but I think it's something that I would really like to do. So,
yeah, people would love that. I mean, look at City Skylines, for example. I mean, that game is just blowed up. It's like Paradox's biggest game, I think, because a lot of it is because of the mod support.
Yeah.
For example.
Yeah. Yeah. Mod. Right. Exactly. I mean, we are singing the same tune, my friend. I think that, I do think that if we, you know, it's very, like, I consider, put it this way. If you look at all the space shooters that exist out there now, right? The modern ones, and even just all of them, right? All of them go all the way back to Free Space One and X-Wing and TIE Fighter. The only one that has gotten total conversions has been Free Space 2. And the only reason why they did that is because they released their source code and they released their, you know, their tools.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's been no other ones that have.
Yeah, I think X-Wing Alliance didn't get total conversions, like campaign style stuff, but they did have a lot of like custom models to where you could do your own scenarios. But you're right, Free Space 2 is the only one that did get total conversion.
We could be that one. We could be that next one. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Free Space 2 obviously is the king of shooters still. I don't proclaim that we hold a candle to them, but I mean, I think that it could build a pretty strong community, using, you know, Steam Workshop, for example, and people downloading their own mission packs and their own, total conversions. Our tools to build missions are that easy to use.
I believe it. I totally believe it. And, cause people love that sort of stuff. I mean, there's a reason that all these super, like Bethesda, for example. I mean, look how, I mean, their games are pretty, you know, expansive to begin with, but I don't think people would still be playing Skyrim.
No.
On the PC if they couldn't mod the fuck out of it. So.
Yep. You're 100% correct.
So I'm a huge fan of, cause that would, like you were saying, that would definitely differentiate you from a lot of the other space sims out there. You know, the space games, it would definitely make you, I think, a little more appealing to people if they could add their own, you know, stuff.
Yeah. Especially a first-person game like this.
Yeah, exactly.
Because a lot of the space games that are moddable out there that are new today are all strategy games, right? And I'm not trying to rag on that because they're fun. Sons of a Solar Empire, Homeworld.
Yeah.
I mean, they're great. But having something like this that you could totally convert, oh, God, I am so on board.
Right? I mean, yeah. I mean, right. Yeah, I think
let's do the Death Star, like, you know, trench run, right? You know, let's do
the Endor run. You mean yes?
The Endor run. Where just like shoot the pipes. Jim knows.
But anyway. We both know.
I mean, absolutely. You know, you could build anything you wanted. I mean, it's especially our editing tools. You know, and what we did. Is we put a ton of we have this system called a spawn object. So basically what a spawn object is any object in the world can be destroyed.
Ooh.
Like literally any object in the world. If it's part of the spawn object system, it can be referenced in the script. It can be assigned a health point value. It can be assigned death effects and sound effects and all that, and it can be destroyed. So you could see how a Death Star type scenario could work.
Mm.
Oh.
It's that extensive. Like it's kind of amazing. We have an entire, not only persistent ship system where ships will carry over their damage from mission to mission, but we have branching where you could branch like and do crazy, like left, like, Walking Dead type of, you know, scenarios where you're choosing one thing or another and then that branches.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah. We have all of that functionality built in. The reason why we didn't do it is just purely scope and time and money, right? But
so let other people do it.
But yeah, dude.
Release those tools. Just holy crap. I oh my gosh. People need to know about this game right now. Oh my gosh.
Because I mean, it's built on such a well supported, well known engine. There are probably so many modders that could just dive right in with your tools and do all kinds of awesome shit. Oh, it's exciting.
Yeah, I think that'll be the next thing we tackle, actually, is getting Steam Workshop support in.
Really?
And it'll come in phases. First we'll start, maybe I'll do some Twitch streams of how to use the editor, sort of like a walkthrough of how to use.
Oh, yes.
And build custom missions. And people will be able to build their own missions and package them up and do sort of mission pack. We'll try to add that in. And then,
and if you make these easily selectable through the main menu, especially.
Yeah. Well, it would have to be. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Exactly. I'm getting really excited now. I mean, I was excited to finish this game, but now that the prospect that more might be done with it, that just, it kind of gets me a little tingly.
Like, I was thinking about putting, like, this challenge.
The strangest boner right now.
I mean, literally, I was thinking about putting a bunch of challenge scenarios where it's, like, one-off missions, and you're given, like, maybe a time limit to do this, X, Y, and Z, and you earn medals based on, you know, how long you took or how short you took or whatever, you know, whatever parameters we come up with. I mean, I could literally create those in probably less than a week. I mean, it's that fast. I mean, it takes iteration time to really get it right, right? Like all these missions all the missions in the game have probably been iterated on, I would say 20 to 30 times. But nevertheless, like a decent sized mod team could take our tools and basically recreate, do a total conversion of X-Wing and literally no time. I mean.
We should hit up those Phoenix guys who do tons of mods for Homeworld.
We should call David Westman right now. Because I have his phone number. So.
Dude, okay, I don't want to go there. Never mind. I will go there. I fired him.
Really?
Anyway, that's.
Wait, what?
David Westman, it's your old boss. I gotta tell you.
That's it. Let's drunk dial Dave after we
drunk
dial.
No. Patreon Plus. Patreon Plus.
I like Dave. He worked at Volition for a while. Here's my issue with Dave. Is he claims that he was the lead designer on Saints Row, and he was for 2 months before it was ever called Saints Row, before he got demoted and then was eventually fired. And so and during that whole Starfighter campaign, he publicly brought, you know, acknowledged and said, you know, that he was the lead designer, and it was bullshit. I mean, you know, for 2 months, I mean, and how does that qualify as being, you know, anyway, but, and then
he got to sit in the chair.
Yeah. So technically speaking, I guess that is correct,
the Starfighter and Inc. thing that they're doing, right? Because it's like, I talked to him. I did kind of a pretty lengthy chat with him.
I listened to that. Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
That was good.
So what I'm looking at when I see that, well, first off, I think that perhaps the arena thing, it's not really messaged the way that it could have been, because people look at MechWarrior Online, World of Tanks, stuff like that. There's no story. It's just, let's drop 20 people on a map and they kill each other, right? And when people think of, like, hey, I want a spiritual successor to TIE Fighter, that doesn't mean I want a melee arena. I want some story, right? But what he was talking about is actually that no, there's story. There's actual, like, asymmetric objectives that are happening in the map, you know, and it's like Team A and Team B happen to be on the map together, but the mission may not be to kill each other, right?
Right.
It's they're both trying to prevent something from happening or make something happen, but it's not necessarily that Team A has to prevent Team B, but they can interact, right? So it's like, well, that's cool, you know, and if there's actually something to do, there's goals other than just be the last man standing. Yeah. That's the mistake that all these other games kind of make. because it's like I dearly love MechWarrior Online, but I get kind of burnt out because it's just like I keep dropping with random groups of knuckleheads, and it's like, ah, God. So honestly, I just whenever we played X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, right? Because we have a Thursday night gig where unfortunately we got stuck on one of the missions, and I told Dave he needs to come in and beat it for us. He needs to be our ringer because we can't beat this fucking mission. But it's and he knows the one too. I asked him and he's like, oh yeah, that. It's like, yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. So and by the way, Dave is admittedly the guy that made the medic frigate mission. It was mission 4 in X-Wing. He said he's learned his lesson since then. But it's just I don't know, man. It's almost like I look at this and I see here's the guy that made X-Wing and TIE Fighter and was in Battle over Britain.
Can I stop you for a second?
Yeah.
Okay. He didn't, and that's the thing. Like, I'm sorry, but he was a mission designer, and I'm not saying I'm not downplaying his role. But for someone that likes to proclaim that they were the creative lead on these projects, it's a lie, and he's only doing that to sell himself to the Kickstarter campaign that failed. But I mean, still, it just chaps my hide when people misrepresent what they do on a project. Anyway,
it's me in that case, right? Because he did say, you know, I was just the mission guy on X-Wing and then TIE Fighter, but he wrote some of the story in TIE Fighter, right? But then whenever it came time for XVT, he was actually the lead on that. That's my mistake, not him. But it's just the thing. Like, I have been waiting 17 years to talk to the dude that was involved in this, right? And I wish that I could speak to them all, but, you know, I'll take what I can get. But it's just when you look at that and it's like, okay, here is the TIE Fighter guy, right? And sitting next to the TIE Fighter guy is the MechWarrior 2 Mercenaries guy. What the heck can these two guys make together? Because those are like the two games that I put, maybe 1,000 hours into each, right? Yeah. So I have some experience with their stuff. And it's just like, okay, so we put these two towers of power together and something has to come out of this, right? But the Kickstarter was just like, I looked at it and it didn't inspire me like that. Cause I knew what was, you know, kind of going on, what the potential is, but I just don't think that they actually put that forth in the right way because it kind of fell short and there's no way it should have. I mean, my God, Chris Roberts, $85 million. We can't throw these guys like 200,000. Come on.
I think one of the reasons that sort of killed them from the beginning of the campaign was that when they mentioned World of Tanks, that's it, right? That's kiss of death.
And Counter Strike. Counter Strike.
Yeah, that's unforgivable in my opinion.
Because when they first mentioned X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, I was like, yay! And then they're like, Counter Strike and World of Tanks.
Let's name some multiplayer games. Right.
As soon as you throw in any sort of free-to-play game in a Kickstarter where you're appealing to not the demographics that are for that, it just kills it. It just absolutely kills it.
Even if it's not a Kickstarter game, like, remember that when the Wargaming.net folks finally announced Master of Orion, their new Master of Orion? They had to really quickly say, this is not free-to-play. So they had to really quickly.
Yeah, it's not even that team of guys. In fact, we don't even know those guys. These are some other guys, and
guys are from another dimension. They don't know anything about this.
Exactly,
they're coming at this from a completely blind angle. They have no baggage with them. It's fabulous.
You know, Brian's serious when he drops into Harry Carey mode.
Anyway, I don't want to disparage Dave. I like Dave. I've worked with him. He's a good dude. It's just something about saying that you're the lead designer. For 2 months, I don't think that counts of saying I was a lead designer on. It's like, let me put it this way. I was at one point, like a producer type for Duke Nukem Forever. Now
it was your fault.
Son of a bitch.
Motherfucker. But I worked at the company. I worked at 3D Realms for 3 months, before I got fired, but, for trying to start my own company. But anyway.
I thought you were going to say for throwing a coup. We're going to kick Broussard out of here and make this freaking game.
No, no, no. I mean, George's friend. But
I have a question before you go on. What the fuck was George and company doing during that whole time? Because they were like, yeah, we're making Duke Nukem. Okay. For 20 years, right? Like, what kept the lights on? Were they, like, dealing crack out the back door?
No. But they made a lot of money off of Max Payne. They owned half the rights of Max Payne, and they sold that.
But that's not a product that you yourself are making, right? So why But why do you show up to the office every day and turn the computer on? What are you making? You know?
Oh, yeah. Like, so, okay. It's a good question. I'll try to answer this as politically correct as I can, and I'm certainly not known for being politically correct. But
hookers and blow.
What?
No, nothing like that. It was along the lines of, and I was only there for 3 months, but
Daddy some sugar.
I got a good idea of how things ran there for a while. There was no schedules. There was no deadlines. Everybody was sort of working on kind of whatever they wanted to work on. There was no leader sort of steering the ship.
How long were you at Valve?
It's like, what are we doing today?
The difference is that at Valve, if you're not actually contributing, you're fired. Like, there's no, yes, you can work on whatever you want, but you have to be valuable and you have to contribute. And I have a lot of friends that work at Valve, and some of their handbook stuff is not exactly accurate, but you have to show value. You have to show progress, right? And if you don't, then they'll find someone that will. So and you'll be out of a job. So it's not quite the same. In there, it was like, everybody was just kind of doing their own thing and they were perfectly content, sort of status quo until the money ran out, essentially.
Right. Wow. So I had a theory now, since we brought up Valve, a theory, right? Because the economist guy, I cannot think of his name, the Greek dude, that was there. And he is the guy that invented the whole psychological game that is the Steam sales, right? Because I swear to God, it was like really? Some kind of CIA psych op is what's going on. Because it's a human behavior, like, those Steam sales are like making us run a maze like rats and see what we do, right? Because they change it up like every year. There's a little something different. There's, the different pattern and we're going to try. And yeah. So I noticed this year, now that he's gone, it was actually kind of different. It was just like a normal thing. There was no weird gimmick. I mean, they had the monster thing and the clicky, but it wasn't as insidious as it has been, with the whole, like, the switcheroo and like, oh, we're going to have it cheaper this day. You
guys could win like $100 worth of games or.
No. I mean, just the thing of like playing peekaboo with a price, right? Like today, this game's going to be $9. But wait, we're going to have a flash sale tomorrow, and oh, now it's $5. So if you bought it yesterday, sorry, right? So the next time you see a game like on a flash sale or whatever, it's like you jump on that shit, and then you get to the end of the sale, and oh, shit, it's $2, So, and they didn't do that stuff this time, but it was kind of a thing to see what people would do and when would people jump on a price and that. And I know they were studying us. So it's great. But so he left there and he went over to Greece, which Greece this week is having a pretty interesting situation. And and I was thinking about how he could employ the Valve connection to fix Greece, and he could do it overnight. So what they need to do is say that you can pre-order Half-Life 3. You can only do it in drachma. So then the Greek currency will spike overnight as people convert their American dollars into drachma so that they can pre-order Half-Life 3, and then the European Union is saved. Thanks, I'll be in town all week.
Sounds like snake oil to me, son.
I'm serious, man. We could fix it.
You must be some kind of witch doctor.
I know, right? It's
run them out of town, people. I don't know where that came from.
I don't know, man. I just, too bad
Half-Life 3 is never going to happen. But
I know, because Half-Life 3, it makes no money compared to just being Valve.
That's right. Yeah. From a business point of view, it makes zero sense.
They should just let somebody else do it then. But they would.
Well, they let a whole group somehow remake the original Half-Life and sell it on Steam.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
So...
Wait, what?
And they're not even done yet, though, right?
Yeah, that's
that. Well, no, they're not, but they're still...
What's going on?
But yet it's still on... Like, Valve's not doing anything about it. It's its own game, and they're charging money for it.
Yeah. Well, they got Valve's blessing, though, to do that.
But still, like, if they can do that, then clearly there's hope that they just bring in some other team to make the last... You know, finish what you started game, you know?
Remaking the game and just basically putting in all new assets, it's still hard work, right? But you have a blueprint there, right? You have basically guidelines and it's a lot easier to just sort of remake assets and plug them in than it is to build something from scratch. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, but they got a writer there, like Eric Wolpaw. What's he writing? You know, it's like there's nothing for the guy to do. I don't understand.
Is there any dialogue in Dota?
I don't know. I haven't played
I've never
it.
Like
played
characters Dota. That say stuff, but yeah. Not like, but not like, you know, a story.
Yeah, it's,
right.
I mean, I'm waiting on the second coming of GLaDOS or something to come out of him, and... I don't know. They're not giving him a canvas to paint on, and he's good.
I too would like to know, because I have a good friend that's also a writer that went there. He was he was my lead writer on Saints Row 1 and ended up being the creative director of Volition for all of the secondary Saints Rows, or all the subsequent Saints Rows. And he actually got a job at Valve and just to writing again. So I'm really curious what they're working on. But I mean, I've been told by many, many people that Half-Life 3 is not going to happen, but you know, maybe it will. And they're just keeping the secret of a lifetime, you know?
I would say Half-Life 3 on SteamOS only. Go get your Steam box.
No. So here's what I read from Gabe, apparently. According to an interview I was reading with him, he said Half-Life 3 could have happened if the people that work at Valve decided they wanted to make it happen. Like, he'd have to have, like, enough people that came to him and said, we can do this, and then they would do it. But apparently, since no one's been coming to him going, like, let's make this game, they're not doing it.
What? Then we need to fire everybody.
Which I'm thinking, like, if that's true, then you, something's wrong, because, yeah. But they're the original, right? They're like one of the originals to like make promises and then not deliver, because they talked about, you guys remember all this with like Half-Life 2, and there was going to be an episodic, yeah. It was going to be three episodes, and yeah, they never delivered on that.
Mm. Yeah, but they never.
You may have forgot, but Petrich Farm didn't. So
right, but I mean, the difference is that they never forced people to pay money to fund the development of those games. So.
Did you ever?
No, but they didn't need to, because they were making money hand over fist with like everything else that they were doing.
Did you get the achievement for launching the gnome in the rocket?
Yes. Because,
okay, you sick bastard. What? There was an achievement in episode 2, was it, where you had to launch a rocket, and there was a garden gnome, like, in the room that you start the game in, right, or very close to the beginning. There's a garden gnome, and you could pick it up with the gravity gun and carry it, but you can only carry one thing with the gravity gun, so you would spend the entire game, put the gnome down, fight the monsters, pick the gnome back up, walk down the road, right? And you had to drag this frickin' gnome along through the whole game. And then when you get to the end where you can hit the button and launch the rocket, the door is open and you pitch the gnome in, shut the door, and then launch the rocket, and you get an achievement. And that's the only way to get it. YouTube it.
What? That's kind
and,
of... What?
Dude, it's sick stuff like that that it's like, my God, can we please have Half-Life 3? Because the minds that put that in there, right?
I agree.
The sinister bastards, they need to make something.
There hasn't been a truly great shooter since Half-Life 2, in my opinion.
Although, did you see the like director cut of Half-Life 2? Because they went back and like retextured the whole thing, and it looks amazing. I don't know. Did they do the episodes as well?
Didn't they do video logs or something for that?
Well, that was a whole nother thing, right? Where they released the episode, and then like every couple steps, there was a thing to click on that was like the developer commentary. It was like picking up audio logs in the game.
Yeah, dev commentary. Yeah.
More games ought to do that, actually, because games seem obsessed with leaving audio logs around, like ever since, System Shock? That's been the deal, right? So if you're going to leave like CDs lay around or something, like once I beat the game, the second pass through, have all the CDs be the developer commentary as an Easter egg, right? And that would, it wouldn't make it out of place in the game. It would be pretty great. I don't know.
I agree. I think dev commentary for stuff like that would be amazing. Even if someone would just like record a video and they could have
drunken Arnold Schwarzenegger just talk, right? Did you ever listen to the director commentary on the Conan movies?
No.
It's worth owning the Blu-ray just for that, because Arnold is drunk and rambling. And it's beautiful. Yeah. So, anyway.
Well, yeah, I will agree. I think Half-Life 2 is one of the last great shooters, story-wise, to ever come out. I mean, if you want to go console, I could give the original Halo trilogy some love, but...
What about Stalker? What about Metro? What about Singularity? What about...
Those were fun, but they didn't grip me not near as much as Half-Life 2 did.
Oh, I've never played Half-Life 2, so...
There was something about the story, there was something about the characters, there was something about that world that made you just love it.
I was compelled to finish that game, and I don't finish games. And
right, exactly. Like, you're just like, what? I want this. And that's why when Half-Life 2 Episode 2 ended, everybody's so pissed because it's such a huge cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes, yeah. It is a massive cliffhanger.
Oh,
because
it's crazy.
All I'm going to say is a major character dies, and you're left there, like, defeated. Like, it's such a downbeat, like, ending that you're just like, why can't we finish this and, like, win the day?
I know. Yeah. It's like it's the equivalent of Spock died, right?
And it was like,
wow,
really?
It was a giant space lima bean that killed him. And
was it that Gordon fellow?
No.
Did he die?
No, that's you.
That Gordon fellow. No.
I never got into Half-Life. The headcrab scared me too much, so I stopped playing the first, like, shortly into the first one, never touched them again.
Wait till you get to the truck stop level. You think the headcrabs are scary.
Well, it's probably not happening, so...
Wait till you get to Raven Home.
Wait till I never play the game. So, I mean, whatever, you know?
Raven Home. Oh, God, that was awesome, because it's a frickin', it's Castlevania stuck.
So right, but you got the priest chanting at you, and he's got all those booby traps all over the place, and he's like, hello, friend! Hope you don't die in my booby traps! Make it through!
Did Valve do the Left 4 Dead games? Because Larry in YouTube asked...
Yes,
Larry in...
Well, it wasn't them,
the YouTube chat.
Wasn't it like people that they contracted in? They hired some modders, and because that's kind of what they do, right? They'll pick modders up and then stick them in Valve,
yes,
and they crank out.
Yeah, well, they did that with like Day of Defeat and Counter Strike and Portal. But
I forget, it was originally the Turtle Rock guys, and then Valve bought out them, and then they forced them to move to Bellevue, where their office was at, and then they basically said no, and they rebought their studio, and I don't know. It was a mess. It was a bit of a mess. I don't really know the whole story behind it, but because Turtle Rock now exists, right? They did the Evolve, right? So.
Oh yeah, that's right. Which I can't get into. I mean, I like the concept. It's cool. It's an asymmetric Team Fortress, right? But
yeah.
I don't know, man. What kills it for me? If you could get in and the game just launched, right? That would be cool. But it seems like every time I go in, we'll get people in the lobby and then you sit for like 10 minutes waiting on that last person, and by the time that person shows up, somebody else dropped, and it's just like, God, if you could join the game with like a pre-made four-man group, you could have a blast. But when you're trying to just do random pickup games, you spend more time waiting for the game than actually playing the game. So
Larry said on YouTube there was talk of potential Left 4 Dead 3, but I think that was because they were talking about the new Source Engine, or was it Source Engine 2 or something like that? Mm-hmm. And there were screenshots of Source Engine 2 using similar maps from Left 4 Dead 2, but in the Source 2 engine. But whether or not a 3 is going to come out has not been confirmed, from what I understand. But my beef is, if they're going to come out with any form of a part 3 or a number 3 to any of their games that is not Half-Life, I mean, there will be hell on Earth.
So they should just skip to Dota 3, right? Just totally skip right to Dota 3.
You know, I've heard nothing really good about Dota. It's the community, right? Because it's like you can get in League of Legends and people treat you decent, right?
What? I've heard the complete opposite. I've heard League of Legends is like bile and full of shit.
See, I've heard both. And so I just assume that both communities are shit. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I'm never playing those games, so whatever.
Well, apparently, what I heard is League of Legends is like full of Russians. Or not League of Legends, Dota 2. It's like, has a very heavy Russian population, and if you don't speak Russian, they don't like you. So, you know. But interesting thing that I learned, right, was America is, of course, the number one population that's on there, because we have like 22 million people that are Steam subscribers, right? Mm-hmm. But Russia is number two, and they have like 6 or 10 million, which I had no idea. But you know, so it's kind of like, well, you know, if you're gonna spend any money localizing your game, you better put it in Russian, because that's where the other customer base is. That's what I take away from that. And if it's a strategy game, do it in German.
Yeah, space shooter as well. Germans love their space shooters.
Yeah, Eastern Europeans love space games. That's why.
That's the only place you could get one.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, during those dark years, those are the only. Thank God for them. Those are the only folks making them. I mean, sure, you had lots of crap, but you also had some great stuff like, you know, Space Rangers and shit.
Yeah. Hey, Brian, quick question. In the YouTube channel, was there any feedback on the tools? We were talking about releasing the tools. Was there anybody commenting on?
Yes. Someone said a Babylon 5 conversion would rock. So, listening to the tools about modding is getting them excited. So there hasn't been a lot of talk on YouTube, but yes, there has been some excitement about the talk of modding. Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Oh, I think that would definitely engender much more positive feelings towards your game. Not that there isn't, but I think that would definitely make people more aware of it as well, because people are like, ooh, I could make the Battlestar 1980 mod I've always wanted.
Yeah, right.
Or Galactica 1980, excuse me. I can't believe I got that wrong.
Wait, it's time.
Are you talking about like it's chips in space, right? Is that what that was?
Dude, it's time. We have to drunk dial Derek. Right.
No, and we're not doing it. No,
because Derek could finally finish Battlecruiser 3000, because this is the engine. This is it. He could do it.
So our next game, if I may talk a little bit about what we're planning on doing next. Actually, it's actually an alpha state. That's how fast we are. But we created an entire fleet management game and using our engine and our assets, where you actually manage a fleet of ships.
What?
And you can, it's all third person, so the camera rotates around the ships. All of the, you basically upgrade and you can repair and your fleet, and you basically, you gain ships over time, and you increase the size of your fleet. And then at a predetermined sort of point, when you've reached like your maximum, population count, then you can there's an end game, and you go through a series of sort of sequences to basically reach the end point. You can choose multiple commanders that each have bonuses tied to your fleet. You launch fighters. You collect salvage from enemies destroyed, and then you use that salvage to upgrade and repair your fleet. And it's basically, imagine like, it's not really an RTS, but it's like, mixes some elements of FTL with a little bit of Homeworld, but its own beast. It really is its own thing. And it's kind of roguelike, in the sense that if you die, you die, you know, you get to start over.
I'm feeling Star Control 2 just coming back to me here. Like it would be a different kind, but that was the deal there, right? So you roam and you're picking up other ships and whatnot, right? And then you've kind of got your fleet,
sort of.
Yeah,
but you don't use the whole fleet at once. You
well, that's
one
true.
Ship at a time.
That's true. So
yeah, in this you actually can control up to 20 ships, and I'm not talking like just fighters, and I'm talking 20 capital ships
okay.
that you can manage.
There's to quote Krieger from Archer, stop. My penis can only get so erect.
But wait, there's first person mode, and you can land on the planets. You can run around in any of the ships, and that's a stretch goal.
No,
it's
got to
get $80 million.
Please don't.
But, so then you can get the luxury yacht with the fish tank.
Oh my god,
dude! Mass Effect already had the fish tank, so I don't know what they're.
They did.
Oh right. My god, you
they
guys.
Did have the fish tank.
You guys. No, so this game is already in the works.
It's no. What was it? Was it Mass Effect 2 that had the gerbil?
I don't know.
But that
so, no, it was like
that was only if never mind. I was going to make a sick joke. But
so Brian, to answer your question, it's not only in the works, it's actually fully playable. Like I could give you a Steam code tomorrow morning and you could play it yourself.
Give me a Steam code tomorrow morning. Don't just say you're going to do it.
Why does it take that long? Like
oh,
what?
Oh, cuz I'm not
sorry.
I'm not,
I don't mean to yell, but you said that's
I know he's giving you blue balls
such,
here. Like what?
I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight again because I'm just going to be thinking about this all night. In anticipation.
So, okay, I'll do that, but it's very alpha. It's very, you know, it's very, very sort of.
Whatever.
But I'll tell you, I
love playing alphas. What? Sorry, go.
We have a couple users that have been playing it sort of as a private sort of test bed.
Yeah.
And in this state, they've logged over 30 hours playing it, it's you know very unpolished and very unbalanced.
All right. So is the gameplay out over a series of linear missions? Do you select sectors to go to on a map based on a generated map? Like, how does the game play out?
So it's all systemic. There's no map per se.
Oh, okay.
But in a sense that you jump from sector to sector, and the sort of scenarios that you run into are sort of they gradually increase in difficulty as you assemble your fleet. And so you come across, you know, capital ships that attack you and bombers and gunships and all the stuff from our game, right? We're reusing all of those assets, but it's a third person fleet management game.
Is it in this universe? Is it in this universe?
It's in a series of deep space maps. But yes, it is essentially in our, We don't reuse any of our solar system maps. It's all of our deep space maps, but I mean, you know, it's still unfinished. So we'll probably end up reusing some of our solar system maps, but that stuff would be in a linear, probably in a fairly linear order. I mean, you wouldn't repeat the same solar system maps over and over and over again, put it that way.
Right. But I mean, no, does it take place in the same universe as Battle of Seoul?
Okay. So there's no story per se. It's called the Fleets of Seoul, but it reuses the same assets.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's not directly related to it, but it is a truly sort of very interesting beast. It's very hard to describe. You'll play nothing like it ever.
So it's like Starflight Tactics. It's like Starlight Tactics.
No.
To Starlight.
No, no,
I'm
no,
so
no.
kidding. I'm so kidding. I'm totally joking.
Yeah. No, no.
I did not mean to seriously compare your game to whatever that was.
I'm gonna send you a code back into my desktop, and I'll get your take on it. I mean, the feedback that we've gotten has all been very, very positive, but it's just a very interesting game. It's not turn based. It's all real time. You have control over your systems of your ship, so you can launch fighters. You can launch missile attacks. You can direct your attacks to a particular ship. You can focus your camera on any of the ships in the world and watch what they're doing. And you just sort of like give orders and sort of watch these massive space battles go on.
Now, are you in the capital ship? Okay, so if that one ship gets killed, you're toast, right?
No, if your main capital ship gets killed, I can't recall. I think that is toast. But the way it works is that it's really like if your whole fleet gets destroyed. So not just one ship. If your whole fleet gets destroyed.
Okay, because I was thinking if you had the one command ship, like protect this at all costs because this is you, then, you know, but that's a different dynamic, right? But did you ever play
But it's like think of it like, okay, you know, like an FTL, you arrive in a sector, you have to deal with something, and then you jump out, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like that, except when you arrive into a sector, you're given a time limit before you can jump out, before your jump drives are ready.
Okay.
And then once they're ready, you can jump out, but you can be interdicted. And then you have to, you know, buy a special ship, and you have to destroy that ship before you can jump out. So it's like a tons of different sort of random scenarios like FTL, right? But instead of controlling people in the ship, you're controlling fleets of ships.
You know, we could put you in touch with John Hemry. And because did you ever read The Lost Fleet? Because that's some books that he wrote where
I've heard about.
Okay, so they lost, right? But they managed to run because they got in a trap and, you know, Akbar, and they managed to jump out, right, at great sacrifice. But they saved a bunch of the ships, and then they spend the rest of the series of books limping at home, kind of thing. So,
yeah,
but it sounds kind of similar, you know, where it's just like, okay, we have to solve this and then we can jump again. So, yeah, that's pretty neat. So, is it entirely third person or could I jump into a fighter and fly around?
No, it's entirely third person, yeah.
Okay.
I'm fine with that. You got to send three codes. Just saying. Okay. You got to send three.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, here's what I was thinking, right?
All right.
I thought about this today. I wanted to sort of run this by you guys. Give me your opinion. So think about, like, and when you play it tomorrow, think about what if you're playing it in VR, where you are in your presence is in this, you know, space, and you're watching these ships all going at it, and you can direct your eyesight at certain, you know, at whatever ship you want, and then give that ship orders, and you're watching all of this battle unfold around you in real time, in 3D.
Or you could put it on the kitchen table with Microsoft HoloLens.
Theoretically, you actually could. Yep.
But see, that would be the deal, right? Because then you could get that Microsoft contract, because I think nobody else is making a game for HoloLens. So
it's kind of like Harpoon-ish, in space-ish, real-time-ish. And then you're like the admiral on the aircraft carrier taking care of the fleetish type thing.
Yeah, but you have like real time, like you can tell ships to go, you know, go here and go, you know, go to. Well, you can't right now. There's no like, because it's all 3D, right? There's no like point to a particular a spot in space and go to that particular direction. You can tell them to go to other ships and attack other ships and avoid other ships. And there's that sort of limited movement and stuff like that. But it's not like an RTS in the strictest sense of like, well, I have this ship selected and I tell it to go to this point.
I'm fine with that. I'd much rather be able to orient on objects rather than just go to this random area. I'd much rather that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's exactly. You're orienting on objects and other ships per se. And but you watch this and like, you just get into some crazy scenarios where ships try to box each other in, and I don't know, and it's all 3D, right? So they're actually moving in almost Eve type of fashion, where it's all different crazy angles and to try to get an angle of attack on your ship. So it's on the enemy. It's really interesting. It's just such a. I mean, I've been playing it quite a bit, and I didn't come up with the concept. Our lead engineer did, and I sort of let him run with it, and I wanted to sort of sit back and come at it with fresh eyes. And I played it, and I was like, wow, like I've never seen anything like this. I mean, it's a very interesting game. So I can't wait to hear your guys' feedback, because it's, I'm really, really interested in what you guys have to say.
Well, I'm excited. I love stuff like that. There aren't enough good. I mean, they're making more, but there aren't enough really, I think, good capital ship command type games. I mean, there are a few in the works now, thankfully, but I mean.
Yeah, Shallow Space is looking pretty bomb.
Yeah, but I mean, besides Shallow Space and maybe a couple others, there aren't a lot of games covering the capital ship side of space combat. So it's always nice to hear that that's going to get some coverage.
So I watched your last when you were talking. Well, I watched you. I should say I watched your Let's Play on Into the Stars.
Okay.
And,
thank you.
No, I watch all your stuff, but
thank you.
I found that one very interesting because I looked at it and I was like, man, this game like looks amazing, right? Like the environments, right. Oh my, gorgeous space environments. The capital ship design is pretty cool.
Right.
But then, like, when you started playing it, it was like, holy shit, is this complicated? Having to... Okay, and then the combat stuff. You put in all of this work on creating these beautiful environments and these beautiful ship, and you're moving the ship in real time, right? You're moving...
Yeah.
And then the combat happens, and it's just a static image of an enemy ship. And you're just trading shots.
It's like a JRPG. It was jarring. I was like, oh God, what just happened? I couldn't. And then I was getting murdered, right? And so I asked the designer, I'm like, what's going on? And he's like, well, are you modulating the shields? I'm like, the what? You know,
yeah,
I saw the button.
There's no tutorial about any of that.
Yeah.
And,
so it's kind of like, it's, the combat is kind of a bit of timing and a bit of puzzle. And a lot of dice. So okay, if that's going to go on, let it go on, but have some like motion, not just like, hey, there's some guys up on my screen. Like, cause it's almost like, Bard's Tale, right? Like here's a monster. Choose what your four guys do. And
yeah, or like Phantasy Star. You guys ever played Phantasy, or Final Fantasy?
Yep. Yeah. That's what I mean. Just JRPG in general is that deal. So
it was really odd, but I mean, visually it looked beautiful, but man, like watching that combat, I mean, that looked like the boringest thing in the world.
It is a little confusing because it gives you the option to look at the outside of your ship and move around in real time. And it's beautiful. And it's stunning. And then like the environment is so far mostly full of stuff you can't do anything with except for like a planet you can orbit. And you know, send mining things down.
Yeah, I was expecting like spiritual successor to Starflight or something.
No, you know? It's not. It's not that at all.
I know, but I had hoped, right? Like, oh, I can orbit this planet. Oh, I can send a shuttle down. I can go mine. And the mining minigame is interesting. I was not expecting that. Yeah,
that's kind of fun.
But it's strange. Like you're playing Drill Tetris. Or something, you know, but it's just like, it's a game that consists of a bunch of disconnected mini games that are only related because they're in the same game. I don't know, man, because people looked at that thing and they see like that spaceship and it's freaking gorgeous.
Oh yeah.
And they're like, oh my God, I got to get that. And then when, you know, it's like, oh wait, no, this is like Puzzle Quest in space. Or something, and little mini games and stuff, and I think people are gonna freak out.
But even the combat just looked like you were missing shots, and you had no really reason why you missed the shot.
Yeah, I was never really clear. Yeah, you're right. I was never like, I thought if I put a guy, if I put a person who was good at piloting and behind one of the guns, like maybe that would make more sense. But nope, just kept missing.
Well, you know, but you know why now, right? Because you look at the color of the enemy's shields, you have to modulate your beam to not be that color. And then whenever their shot comes
that works?
Change your shield to be the color of the incoming
shot.
Oh, I see. Oh, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
It doesn't explain that anywhere.
No, the tutorials aren't there yet. But that's what he told me. And I'm like, oh, okay. So it's kind of it's timing and watching the colors and changing the stuff.
But still, that's pretty.
I don't think people that like the kind of games that we like are going to dig that. And I don't think that people that dig that kind of game are going to look at that because
it's
like. It looks like Bridge Commander.
But that kind of thing could work in a game like The Curious Expedition, which I don't know if you guys have played, but combat is pretty like dice rolly in that last time I played it.
Yeah, is it good?
And that was fun.
I had my finger hovering on the
very good.
Okay.
It's very good.
All right, I'll do that.
It's nowhere near done, but they're about to add dinosaurs. I'm just saying.
Sold. Yeah.
I'm not even kidding. I saw it on Facebook today. Tomorrow's update comes with dinosaurs. Oh, cool. Yeah, so it's very good.
Have you guys seen the No Man's Sky 18-minute?
I watched bits of it. I kind of skimmed here and there. I watched like a minute or two and then watched another couple minutes. And I'm still not convinced there's something besides a pretty game, pretty thing there.
I don't know, man. Space dinosaurs. I missed about 5 minutes in the middle because I had to like run into the bathroom and rub one out. But, you know, it was very exciting to me.
I'm mystified by that. I mean, the scope, it looks, I mean, obviously it's a massive, feat if they pull it off. And then,
right.
I'm wondering how much real variety there's going to be. And then the other thing is, you know, what's the combat looked very sort of one dimensional and they didn't show any space combat. So who knows about that, but, man, I don't know. I've got mixed feelings on it. I mean, it just sounds amazing. Like on paper, like it sounds like.
Yeah.
Have you messed with Planet Explorers? Because Planet Explorers looks like one world from No Man's Sky, kind of. You know, it's like you have space, weird dinosaur creatures, and these little crab things that kill my ass every time I see one. But interesting, right? But it's one of those like survival deals where it's like, okay, you have a you have a compass, a stick, and a rock. Go, and okay, I dig that kind of thing. Hunter and I have been playing the hell out of Ark, and in fact, side note, I'm putting an Ark server up. That's why I transitioned to my laptop today. I freed up the desktop to become an Ark server.
Nice.
But
what? Oh, Ark.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're gonna ride some dinosaurs. Yeah. So. Okay. By the way, speaking of Ark, did you read the Steam review on your game? The guy that was like, if you like X-Wing, this is the game for you. If you like riding a pterodactyl, this is not the game for you. Get Ark.
That's funny. So, I like this. I just saw there was a Steam review. It's like, why can't you change your guns? You couldn't change your guns in X-Wing or TIE Fighter.
I know.
Or most of the Wing Commanders.
I know.
Yeah, but those games were stupid.
Those games are old and stupid. This is 2015. I should be able to do everything I want.
What year is it, man? So
I don't know.
I mean, we added another flyable ship, you know. The way the campaign is structured is you actually play as two different characters.
You should.
Yeah, I saw that. That's very cool.
You could release gun color DLC. Like, do you want purple guns? DLC. $1.99.
I don't know. You know, everybody. It's like with shooters, or space sims. Everybody's got sort of a hard on for one particular type, and when you try to deviate from that type, and you kind of get ridiculed. So
Look at the 4X space, man. If you don't make a spiritual Master of Orion 2 sequel, you're dead. You know, but everybody's like, we're so sick of that. But if you don't make it, then people do nothing but bitch that you didn't make that. And
In Free Space 2, you can outfit your ship with different guns. I mean, you had
That's one of the few games you could do that, honestly.
With gun, you could outfit with different guns or just different missiles?
In Free Space 2, yeah, you can change your guns as well.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Really it, though. Like, not a lot of space games. I mean, yeah, I guess in some games, like, I guess Freelancer and shit, maybe you can. But, like, games like this, like these more militaristic shooters,
right,
you can't change your fucking guns.
Yeah, usually it's integral to the ship. The ship is the guns. And then you get the missiles that you put, right? So, like, the other Aaron Roberts masterpiece, Star Lancer, is that way. Not actually a bad game. I got it running.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, if you're an F-16 pilot, you can't say, give me another gun because I don't like the Gatling gun. Like, no, you can't fucking do that if you're a military pilot with an F. I want a rail gun instead of a Gatling gun. Nope. Sorry. It's built into the damn thing. You're getting what you're getting.
So I had a thought today because I think about
just
this
one?
A lot because I have shit else to do. Okay, Starfighters, like the guy from Shallow Space was showing me the new ship designs because he got an artist, right? And the guy's awesome. He doesn't even tell him what he wants. He's just like, make me an awesome ship. And the guy sends him stuff. But he's showing me this new ship, and it's got, like, big wings on it and stuff, and it looks hella cool. But I'm like, dude, why do spaceships have wings? And especially, like, we were playing that game last week, you know, Defect, and wings change your maneuverability, right? Evercron, wings changes the maneuverability of the ship.
Well, see, what I'm thinking is you can put small reaction thrusters on the wings, and then that can definitely improve your. It's not an aerodynamic thing. I can put thrusters on this.
Yeah. Okay.
It's
I'll
another
buy
place
that.
To put. It's another place to put. Little thrusters.
Yeah. So look at the ships in Elite Dangerous, right? Specifically, look at the Sidewinder. Okay. The Sidewinder is a box with a rocket on the back, right? And it's very angular sloped. Stuff, right? So I got to thinking about tanks because we have not had a hover tank game in forever, and I would really I want a hover tank game that is like Microprose's M1 Tank Platoon 2, like just about that level of real. But it would be very fun, right? But then I'm thinking, well, spaceships, there's no reason for a starfighter to have wings or anything. In fact, the most
unless it goes in the atmosphere.
Well, that's true. But if you're going to make a logically bulletproof ship, right, you want to maximize the amount of armor that's on it and stuff, you're going to have a sloped armor set up like a tank. And so I was thinking, well, what about if you take this slab of armor, right, and put a turret on it? Well, the turret can hit everything in a 180-degree hemisphere, right? So you put a turret on the top and a turret on the bottom. And now you have full coverage to shoot stuff, and that's kind of a starfighter, I would say. Like, you know, you could do world of space tanks. I'm calling war.
Yeah, but the problem is visually that doesn't look anything near as cool as space fighters.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like Star Wars. And
exactly.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
And that's a big. I mean, it's from talking with Westman, right? Because their project that they did right before X-Wing was. They did like Battle Hawks 1942 and then Secret Weapons of the Luftwaffe and then X-Wing. And you kind of see the evolution when you think about it that way, that it's like, oh yeah, cause we went straight from World War II to World War II in space. And yeah, but it's like, if you don't do that kind of starfighter model, then you end up with something that's like Frontier where you just make like light speed runs past each other and hope you hit them with the laser. You know, so,
yeah.
You know, it's, I don't know. I mean, you need some kind of semi-Newtonian yet aerodynamics in space kind of model, or it's just not fun.
And that's what I think boils down to, I think, even in a sense, why maybe Starfighter Inc. didn't do as well maybe as they would, you know, besides the whole free-to-play aspect, the fact that they were trying to advertise it as the, you know, the most realistic space sim ever, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know, like the thought of just pure Newtonian physics, it just I mean, I played games like that, and boy, I was awful at it, and I never felt like I got any better at it. So that might have turned off people too. It also definitely turned on the hardcore people. So, but maybe there wasn't enough of the hardcore people to offset the people that it turned off. And maybe the hardcore people are not big fans of free to play. So there you go.
Yeah, because it's almost like, I don't know. Maybe there needs to be a multiplayer combat version of Kerbal Space Program.
Yeah,
like an adversarial arena mode. Like, build your shit and bring it. Because then you would get the space tanks.
Yeah, but, you would, you know, absolutely.
Dude, we saw a video. Somebody made a pirate ship with sails that unfurled and everything. Like a space pirate ship. It was beautiful.
In Kerbal?
Yeah.
Yep.
It was awesome. And
that's
then,
amazing.
Yeah, I had to show it to Martin Cyrillus because those guys worked on Treasure Planet, right? And I was just like, dude, this guy Treasure Planeted Kerbal. It was awesome.
Anyway, we've been talking for, I think, over 2 hours. We should probably wrap – about 2 hours. We should probably wrap this up.
That's it. It's time to call Derek.
No.
Let's,
no. It's midnight over
now.
There. It's, I hate you guys so much. Chris, I want to thank you for joining us because your game is fun. I'm really excited about your new game too. But guys, Battle for Soul, fun time, possible modding, which makes it even more exciting. And then another fleet combat game thing coming. That's super exciting as well. Yay.
So are you going to put out like an SDK kind of thing for the game?
Oh, I'm going to put out, Jim.
No,
I'm going to put out.
Not you. But
Jesus Christ,
but I mean,
no.
Like if I had any kind of skill at all, and I said I'm gonna port X-Wing into this or something, right? Like, what do I have to do? Do I have to wait on you to provide something else, or is do I just download the game and start plugging away at it?
Well, when we add in workshop or mod support, then it would just be you download the game and then you would basically take your models and plug them into our game and use our create new sort of script files to change all the settings, you know, that you want, like refire rate of your guns and, you know, the sockets that the effects fire out of and your speed. And I mean, we have all those settings, right? So,
okay. So what scripting language do I need? Do I need Lua? Do I need just C? What am I going to do it in?
No, in our UC files, it's all Unreal Script. The entire game is actually written in Unreal Script, so it's pretty easy to pick up. And really, for mod stuff, there's very, very little scripting that they have to do. It's really sort of swapping out values and replacing asset paths, you know, and then using our mission editor to create their missions. I mean, it's all really, really easy. The mission creation system is super, super easy. There's no scripting involved. It's all through an event-driven system.
Oh, that's very cool.
We don't even use Kismet at all. It's all just through this entirely event-driven system, triggers, events, and so forth. And you can pretty much create just about any mission you want.
That's cool, because as soon as you said that it was inspired by Fred, because we've had people on before that just said, well, you know, Fred is it. That's the best thing we've ever used, and we wish that our own tools were like Fred. And
that's true.
You know, the highest of praise, right? So, yeah, and if it's coming from there, then more power to you.
Yeah, in a sense, it is. I mean, it's along those lines. I mean, you can almost do kind of whatever you want. You know, you just place your ships down and then – you can, you know, tell them to, you know, you control their AI, you tell them to move to path nodes and waypoints and that sort of thing. And I mean, it's, you know, it's very almost, I would say almost any mission in Free Space 2 could probably be done in our tool set.
Very cool.
So it's been heavily iterated on since, you know, Soul Exodus. I mean, I designed it for Soul Exodus, and then we just greatly extended, you know, its feature set for this game. I mean, we even have stuff like in-level warping, where a ship will warp out, and then you can tell it to come back at a certain time. It'll keep all of its health values.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. I mean, we have mission branching. We have you can load missions from other missions. It's, man, if I had a real full size team, you know, working on Free Space 3, for example, I could do it in our tool set without, you know, without really much difficulty.
We know some people that might want to speak to you about that. Can you imagine Blue Planet ported over to this?
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So,
well, folks, let's wrap this up because it's been 2 hours.
Yes. But anytime you want to come back, we'll continue.
Yeah,
left
no
off.
Problem.
Just write down what we were talking about.
Send us codes for that new game. We could talk about that in a few months after it's had time in the oven and you don't mind people streaming it.
Shit, dude, I'll talk about it tomorrow. Let's go.
I mean, honestly, we don't mind if you guys want to, you know, just say it's very, very early, but show them. I don't mind you showing them. I think it's in a state where you can easily show people.
Okay, cool. Because I'll be forthright and say it's early access, guys. But it's exciting. Okay,
it's really like it's really before early access. It's very alpha, but you guys can, you know, take a look and judge for yourself.
Well, early access is kind of a catch-all term anymore. Like it's what I use for like any non-released, non-1.0 game anymore.
Right.
You know, like I don't even know if alpha and beta even freaking matters anymore. I don't even, because some people use alpha and beta, some people use early access. I swear to God, there are a couple of space games where the version number said 1.0. And so I'm like, okay, I'll do a review. And then the developer wrote me and go, I know I use 1.0, but this is still a preview. Oh, what? Okay. Yeah, exactly. So like, there's no cohesion in that anymore.
But I will say we did put in a tutorial so you can learn all about the game without.
Oh, nice. Around. Nice.
Well, that's good. Cause at least we can figure out we have to modulate the shields and.
Oh God. All right, folks. Well, the game is Battle of Soul. It is now on Steam and I was wrong. It is not early access. I thought it was, but it is not. It is a fully released game with lots of missions, two sides to the story and, really fun, streamlined space combat. This is good stuff. So check it out on Steam. I'll be linking to that in the show notes. And next week, if we, I might have a guest in the works. I'm not sure on that yet, but if not, we're going to be talking the document side of space gaming. This is a show I've been looking forward to for a while. I know you guys are not so much, but I love manuals and strategy guides. So that's what we're going
to
be
talking. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, good. Okay. I thought I was the only one.
Nope.
You know, we should have a party some night where we get everybody that has a space game with the word soul in it. Because we could have, like, Beyond Soul and Battle for Soul.
No,
and...
no, we got to get everyone who's got a space game with the word void in it.
Oh, yeah, them too.
Just the word void.
Or like a team, you know, like the souls versus voids.
Oh, God, it'll be Battle for the Network Voids.
I know, it'd be like shirts versus skins, you know.
Someone's got to be Telly Savalas. Someone's got to be Gabe Kaplan. And someone's got to be Farrah Fawcett. I will be Farrah Fawcett. Do you know what we're talking about, Hunter and Chris? Do you remember Battle for the Network Stars?
Barely.
Crickets.
Okay, basically back in the day, and I was reminded of this on the most recent Judge John Hodgman podcast, I'll end with this, there were only three networks, and ABC, CBS, and NBC, and so they would get their biggest stars together for either a night or a multi-night event of things like Tug of War and Softball, and you had like team captains and shit, and it was crazy. I mean, it was absolutely bonkers. Look, you're like, what the fuck are these people doing? But go look it up on YouTube, because if you want to see crazy 70s shit.
It sounds better than Dancing with the Stars, that's for sure.
Oh, I'd rather stick myself with a knife than watch Dancing with the Stars, but I would, I'd rather shiv myself than watch Dancing with the Stars. So, yeah, but Battle for the Network Stars, classic shit. And we're going to end with that. So, folks, thank you. Wow, what a crazy-ass podcast this has been. Chris, thank you so much for coming back on the show to talk about Battle of Soul. Great game, folks. Y'all should play it. And Hunter and Jim, thank you as always.
You're welcome.
And, and folks, folks, we will see you next week. Good night.
We should go out with, like, the Blues Brothers' Soul Man.
Soul Man.
No, wait, we promised no singing ever again after last week.
Oh, but that was great. I could sing. I'm a karaoke wizard.
You're a karaoke wizard, Harry.